This is PCJ Media, broadcasting to South and North America on 9,955 kHz in the 31-meter band. For more information about PCJ, check out our website at www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. Coming up, The Happy Station Show. Everyone, Keith Parent here with you for another edition of The Happy Station Show, your weekly show bringing you some peace, cheer, and joy, as Eddie Starts said many years ago. And if you don't know who Eddie Starts is, we've talked about him on the show before. He was the creator of The Happy Station way back in 1928. But anyway, let's not talk about that right now. This is a special show for two reasons, okay? We're kind of killing two birds with one stone, as they say. As you realize, we didn't open up with our regular theme song. We opened up with the Happy Station song. The reason for that is a regular listener of ours by the name of David Marks, who lives in Kitchener, Ontario, said that he heard us play the song not too long ago. Well, actually, quite some time ago. Wait, so it was like 3 months ago, I think. Yeah, well, 3 months ago. And he said, can we play it again? So, David, there you go. Okay, we opened up today's show with the Happy Station song for you, which is different from our usual theme. Now, the second reason why this is a special show is my guest. My guest on today's edition of Happy Station is David Monson. Now, if you've been listening for the past 3 weeks, I told you that David Monson was once a broadcaster with Belgian Radio International, and he hosted for a number of years Brussels Calling, which at one point was one of the most popular programs on shortwave in Europe. David also worked in Africa and some other places as well. So David Monson is my special guest on today's edition of Happy Station, which, by the way, is airing to all regions. So North America, South America, Indonesia, and New Zealand, and of course around the world on the internet. And speaking of the internet, by the way, we do have a website now. Check us out at www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. Now, let's get back to David Monson for a moment. David Monson is a very special person. He is the kind of individual that I like to hang out with because his personality is so unique, sort of like mine, I think, I hope. Not really sure. But anyway, David has had a long career in radio, and he's been living in Taiwan now for the past 15 years. So I have to thank two people out there for letting me know that. One is Jeff White at Radio Miami International, and the other is Bob Zanotti. Now, as you know, for the past few weeks, we've been running some clips of David on Belgian Radio International. Now, we're going to run a short clip right now, which I think Jeff White will enjoy. This is a clip from when David was working in Namibia. And, well, a very young Jeff White called in with a report.
Below that of 1980, but quality is reported to be up.
Thank you, Bill. Inclement winter weather is nothing unusual at this time of the year in northern climes. But this year, it's been more inclement than usual, with storms and blizzards sweeping across the United States and leaving a trail of disaster in their swath. As we hear from our man on the spot, Jeff White, in Chicago.
The rain is gone now from Northern California, but the threat of the killer mudslides persists, and the death toll from the state's worst storm in decades continues to mount.
That, of course, was a very young Jeff White being introduced by David Monson. Now, the clips of David Monson that we were running on the show for the past few weeks were from his show that he did at Belgian Radio International. Now, David and I have been meeting on Sundays, usually, for coffee after his son's piano lesson, talking about so many things. And, it came to a point where I said, look, we have to do an interview. We have to capture this stuff on tape. So the interview today is sort of how our conversations go on Sundays. So just try to imagine yourself as a fly on the wall as you're listening to David and I talk. But, of course, it's more of an interview, done more in an interview style. So what I did is I headed to the MRT or the subway and took it all the way up to Beto, which is where David lives. So we sat in his garden at his building in Beto, and we had just a conversation over a glass of wine, and I hope you enjoy it.
You were at Brussels Calling, but you're not originally from Belgium. You are actually South African.
Well, I mean, I'm kind of half and half. You know, I've always been a schizophrenic in a way. I'm a bit of a split personality, and very much kind of, yes, I am a little mixed up in that sense of the word, in having had an Anglo-Dutch-German background. I dropped to earth in South Africa, as many people know, but I have, of course, European or Belgian nationality. I almost feel, though, I've lived out in the East so long now, where I came more by accident than design, rather like yourself, I suppose. You know how these things happen. And where I've made my own small contribution to 5,000 years of Chinese civilization. Here's Ali. Yeah.
This, by the way, is David's son, Ali, who actually is learning the piano. Say hello, Ali.
Hello.
There he is with the hello. But David,
would you believe it? I mean, that wasn't around like 50 years ago, right, when I was broadcasting.
So let me ask you, how did you end up in Belgium working for Belgium Radio International?
Well, my gosh, it's so long ago, I can hardly remember. You must remember, Keith, that I am getting on in years now. My God, not quite as old as some of your illustrious previous guests on the show, can I mention their name?
Sure, go ahead.
No. We're all in the same league, basically, as far as ages go now, aren't we? Yes, very much yesteryear. But not exactly past tense. Not exactly past tense yet, certainly. I don't feel that way. And this is an exciting place to be, as you well know. How did I get here?
Well, not here in Taipei, but to Belgian Radio.
Memory's going now, you see that. But how did I get to Belgian Radio? Well, that is a long story. Well, once again, more by chance than anything else. I mean, I was about to take a slow trip to China, I suppose, even at that stage. And, Europe was just over there, over the channel in those days. And I went to Germany, where I thought I might have had some connections, some contacts with Germany from when I worked. Not many people realize this, but I did work for a short time for the old South African Broadcasting Corporation. And I ended up, why don't I can say it, heaven's alive, there's nothing to lose now, is there? Like a job at, the old Bachis Radio and Smelly Visi, television, sorry, right? Very much by chance. I was just telling my son that the other day. He asked me the same question, Ali did. How did you end up in Belgium of all godforsaken places? Actually, I've got a lot of good things to say about Belgium, too.
Yeah, but we're talking about Belgian radio here.
Belgian radio, you're talking about Belgian radio. Well, not many good things to say about them, but no, the fact is, it did give me a breakthrough in Europe, and Belgian radio, I went to Germany, and I got sidetracked in Germany somehow. I met a guy that said he'd worked for Belgian radio, and never told this story before, and said, hey, David, it might be, why don't we, since you're looking for a place to stay tonight, why don't we shack up together? I was young and innocent, and it didn't occur to me that, maybe he wanted to, take my purse or whatever. But he disappeared, completely disappeared, and it only cost me 50% of what I should have paid for the room or the hotel. And very nice of him, he footed up the bill, he paid the following morning. I went out, never saw this guy again, but he had told me in that very, in the couple of hours that I spoke to him that, there was possibly a chance of a job in Belgium on the radio job. So I doubled back to Belgium in the middle of the night, slept on the station, and good Lord, this is an awful long time ago, isn't it? And called them the following morning and had an interview, and because I spoke Dutch, all the South African former Dutch, not very well understood most other places, but I understand it still is in Patagonia of all places, can you believe, they speak Dutch or Afrikaans. But I spoke the lingo, and they seemed to be impressed, and they said, well, listen, there might just be a place for you at Belgian radio, but don't call us, we'll call you. Well, I mean, that's just,
that's a standard line that you hear,
standard,
yeah.
Standard line, and I thought, I'll just go back to, I went back to Britain, London, where I was at that particular time resident, and thoroughly enjoying myself. There was absolutely no reason for my radio to leave London. But I wanted to get back into broadcasting, which I'd done in Africa at a very young age. And I'd traveled, I'd been invited even at the age of 19 when I kicked off in broadcasting, I was invited on a extended trip to Europe by an international airline, name shall be nameless. It wasn't South African Airways. I thought, heaven's alive, this is an opportunity I can't miss. So when the call did come, they called me, amazing enough. And that's how I came to be working for Belgian Radio at that time.
So when you started at Belgian Radio, what kind of things did they have you doing? Were you just a regular features producer and just reading news every now and again, or did they say, oh, we want you to take over this show?
No, there was no newscast at that particular time. It was a program, a tippity program, about 10 minutes long, called Brussels Calling, I think.
So it was 10 minutes?
Only 10 minutes, yes, when I joined them. And it became, I had a wonderful colleague, a lady which some of the shortwave listeners might well remember, Jackie Marshall. She used to call herself Jackie Marshall. She's still going strong, my heavens. She's in her mid-80s now, and she's still a wonderful friend of mine. Her daughter, who is just about my age, or perhaps just 1 year older, we saw her just a couple of months ago in Europe. And I was very happy to be able, a couple of years ago, to meet up with Jackie again, who lives out in the country, and hopefully when I'm next in Europe, who knows when that will be, I will have the opportunity to see her again. But the fact is, They did. I mean, I co-produced this 10-minute program, which I edited as well. And it was basically just an interview a day, a subject a day kind of thing, which we slowly expanded or gradually expanded over a year or a couple of years that I was, those initial years, we expanded into eventually a 20-minute program and then a half-an-hour program, a 30-minute program. I don't think it ever rarely got any longer than that, you know. Certainly not by the time I left. Maybe it did when it eventually became Radio Flanderen, right, I think, because I lost touch altogether.
But the thing that was interesting about it, when I've listened to some old recordings of Brussels Calling, it is very different from what a lot of other European shortwave broadcasters were doing at the time. I mean, well, especially probably because of your personality as well. I mean, it didn't sound, let's say, as stiff as Deutsche Welle or as, you know, stuff shirt, you know, suit and tie BBC.
Well, do I look, you know, stuffed shirt BBC or Deutsche Welle or what? No. Well, I mean, that wasn't intentional. I used to listen to some of these stations, you know, and I appreciated the content. It was just something that evolved, I suppose, the spontaneousness, the spontaneity of the program, I suppose. I'm just about as human as you are, Keith, and I think you're doing much the same thing with Happy Stations. You know, it's a lot of improvisation, and I guess that's the sort of person I am. So very quickly, I realized that, almost intuitively, that, you know, people don't want to, or listeners don't want to sit out there listening to stuffed shirts, and whether it's the BBC, Deutsche Welle, or any one or the other, you know, then official government-run or sponsored radio stations. So it turned into a very informal, as you know, if you listen to it, very informal program. And I was very happy to eventually come around to producing or to every day or presenting the mailbag program, because this really brought me into mailbag, which was then just simple mailbag, you know, it's merely sending off QSL cards, I think you call them, right, to DX listeners around the world, and just responding to a letter. But it became more than that. It became almost an interactive as you could be in those days, you know.
So when you were doing the show for Belgian Radio, how much of a free hand did you have? Or was there a lot of pressure from management to say, oh, David, you know, tone it down, you know, this is Belgium, we're Belgian Radio International, try to make it sound more official. Was this kind of pressure on you?
Well, it's amazing that you asked me that question, because there was one. I can say it all now, heavens alive. I mean, I'm not likely to lose my job at Belgian Radio any longer, because I did, simply because of what you say. I mean, yes, it was very, it did become very bureaucratic. It wasn't at the beginning. I mean, or was it? No, it was. I mean, we had people who were shunted into positions like you've worked for some of these stations, heavens alive, you know how it is. And I don't wish to sound, you know, kind of not sour grapes or vindictive or anything like that, because I'm not, quite obviously. I would have wished it to have been otherwise, but it was just a lack of imagination. You know, people just didn't have the imagination that it took, I think, to produce a shortwave radio program, because shortwave radio programs were just always, it seemed to me, stereotypically formal government kind of propaganda type, if you don't mind me saying that, you know, programs. And, you know, they were dry and deadwood a lot of times, simply because they were being managed by deadwood. I'm, you know, pity to say that, but it's a fact, isn't it? And officials, you know, so I you know, I just wanted it to sound something different, and I found that there was this almost immediate response from listeners to a more informal, spontaneous, and human approach. It's not to say that I was anti, you know, DXs or anything like that, because there were many DXs who responded in exactly the same way. There were also many, probably a lot of DXs who, in the final analysis, alas, because we tried something different also in terms of arranging a convention back in 1980, the year the wall came down in Berlin.
1989,
that's right. Did I have a show? Yes, we did, that's right. That was my last big event at the World Congress, International Convention Center, ICC in Berlin.
But you know, you were saying that, you know, Belgian radio became very bureaucratic and they were putting pressure on you to, you know, to become more serious and all that. But didn't they realize that people were tuning in for a reason? Or was that just not important to them?
I don't think they cared. Like many, they really didn't care. I can say that now, and I wish I was back there still working, you know, for in the interest of Belgium, because it's you know, I love so many of... There's so many... It's so much part of me. I mean, I spent so much time there, and I went to Belgium quite honestly, and fell in love with the Flemish provinces, not for the reason many people do. When I tell people why I stayed and why I fell in love with the place, they kind of, you know, they kind of gasp. It was the light. It was the air. It was something ethereal about the place, the Flemish countryside, the mirage of the Flemish countryside. There's a very special atmosphere. You've been there, I know, haven't you? Yes, you lived in Holland for a while. We've been there. It was a countryside, a platteland, flat country, with that shimmering sunlight over it, you know, the mist that inspired great music, piano compositions. You know, that's another one of my interests, classical music, inspired compositions by composers like Ravel, for instance. So yeah, one of the reasons why I went there, and it sounds like a very obscure and perhaps rather offbeat reason for settling in a place, but that was certainly one of them. And, you know, apart from the fact that I also, in other ways, I became kind of romantically, in more ways than one, kind of enmeshed in the place. And I loved what I was doing. I loved what I was doing at the radio. And I really genuinely loved the interaction with the listeners around the world, which there was. It was really living. So, but yes, the bureaucracy you talk about, of course it was ever present, you know. There were ever people trying to tell me how to do it otherwise.
Mm-hmm. So when did it become, when did you realize that, you know what, they want to ruin this, they want to kill this? When did it start becoming a big problem?
Well, I suppose I don't want to mention any names, no backdrill. I don't, and really, I'm not. I don't wish to sound any way, you know, bitter or twisted or bisted or vindictive. No, I just feel sorry that it turned out like that. That there were people who didn't understand how, not just because of what I was trying to do, but didn't understand the essence of broadcasting, the essence of live, real time. Broadcasting.
Well, you were telling me some funny stories that you would go in at like midnight to do Brussels calling, to do it live, which management didn't like.
No, they didn't.
Would even transcribe the stuff that you were ad-libbing on air, which to me sounds kind of ludicrous.
Well, it's just as well you said that, because it might have sounded perhaps a little bit... when I look back now, I can laugh about it, but it actually did lead to a court case. It led to my... Yes, it also led, simply because a sabbatical on my part, I went away for 6 months, and, you know, everybody thought it would all blow over, I disappeared for 6 months. But yes, there was, constant monitoring, everything I did was transcribed, because they didn't like what I said, some of the time the spontaneity of it all, because they were afraid, what they were afraid of, I don't know, because I could only have been saying positive things about Belgium, and certainly about the Flemish provinces, which I happen to represent, and the culture, and the art, and the music, and everything that Europe, and indeed, Belgium is kind of in a microcosm. You know, I always said, sorry, Bob, you know, sorry, the rest of you, that you know, Belgium, as I say, in a microcosm, the Flemish provinces, the art and the music sector was a microcosm of European culture, and really a repository, more than possibly almost any other small country in Europe, you know, Belgium was.
But for some reason, they didn't like that idea. Which, you know, it's funny, because when I talk to people that worked in other international broadcasters, being it Deutsche Welle or Radio Netherlands or now Belgian Radio International, there seems to be this one period of time where management of all these stations sort of became lost. I mean, it's like a new management crew came in. They didn't know much about radio, and they kind of lost direction in what they wanted to do and became to sound like one another. But they used to sound maybe different prior to that.
Well, they were, just like a lot of what Europe has become, quite honestly, just bureaucrats. I mean, you know, they were just shunted into these positions. They were possibly some of the time toward, you know, ending their career and you know, and in other
Let's put the civil servant in the international service. He's going to retire soon.
That's the word, possibly, just civil servantees. And that's the way, I suppose, it was in many other stations as well. I mean, I certainly recognize that in some of the contact, the exposure that I had to a few other European stations, which I must say, when I left Belgian radio, or even before I left, I was looking for another position. And to my great disappointment, I discovered even friends of mine, who people I thought were friends and that I knew as colleagues once, you know, had indeed themselves turned into, they represented the system in the same way. And were demanding all the kind of, what would you call them? I mean, you know, I don't know how to exactly describe the people, the mentality. Maybe you said it best, you know, kind of bureaucrats or bureau rats or whatever they call them in Brussels these days, you know. But I've just been there. I mean, I just don't like what Europe has become. And maybe, you know, I lose any opportunity of ever going back. I'd love to sometimes. But that's the way the station's become. And I think it's very sad to realize, and people like you have told me, and I learn because I've been out here for so many years just doing my own thing and trying to stay in business in one way or another. And you know, I realize that it hasn't become it. Shortwave broadcasting, I'm told, is dying, right? Or isn't, even as I myself believed, had died altogether. And then suddenly, you know, you pop up from nowhere.
Well, so, you know, there were some people when I said, "Oh, by the way, I met David Monson." Right. People other than Bob Zanotti and Jeff White, they said, "Oh, he's still alive." I went, "Yes, he's very much alive."
Well, hopefully so, because you know, I might be something of a sexagenarian now myself. Yeah, forget about the prefix, but genarian, sexagenarian myself. Can you believe it? I mean, gee, my gosh, where have all those years gone? I mean, we all end up saying that, but you know, I feel more alive and younger than I've ever felt, possibly.
But when you left,
not fossilized like I think so much of Europe has become. Yeah.
But when you left Belgium, you then headed to Namibia.
Oh, you bring back memories again.
That's also an interesting story, because
I always fall out with system. Yeah, I always fall out with the system. It doesn't matter where I am, I guess. Right.
Well, let me ask you that, because it's interesting. Because did you see yourself as a rebel against the system? Were you one of those people? Like, I despise most station management. And it's come to a point where I said, like, okay, if they don't like if they want me to do the kind of show they want to do, which I don't like, I'm going to do my own thing.
Well, I just get very frustrated, you know, Keith. It's not that I just want to do my own thing. I'm prepared to sit down and listen and there's an element of compromise. But I just felt that these people were visionless. They just had absolutely no idea, you know, of what and what useful purpose, you know, this incredible, this magical medium could be for them and for the country. Because after all said and done, all communication is people to people, P to P, you know. Mm-hmm. I've been doing a lot of B to B stuff now, but I'm always a great, you know, believer in P to P, person to person, people to people, my gosh. And you know, they just didn't get it. And so I got incredibly frustrated, and yeah, I wanted to walk all over them, you know. I mean, I could be. I am a rather hot-tempered sort of. I can be rather passionate, you know. I can't be dispassionate about anything, really. I was in love with this media. I was in love with this media, you know. And these people just obviously weren't. They were just, as you say,
Civil servants.
Maybe we get back to their word. And maybe there's still quite a number of these kind of radio stations around today. I mean, I had an example of this just a couple of weeks ago.
So when you left Belgium and you ended up in Namibia, how much time in between?
Oh, you asked me that question. I'm glad you did, because, yeah, I wasn't there very long, because I fell out very quickly, too. I can say that. Yeah, I was appointed chief announcer. cook and bottle washer, everything, you know, a newsreader, program producer for what was then, I suppose, the Southwest African or Namibian, just going on becoming Namibian Broadcasting Corporation. I mean, even Jeff White, good old Jeff White. Hi, Jeff. If you are there now, yeah, you're still alive too, right? You're still around. And Jeff's a bit younger than me, my gosh, but I remember, yes, how well I remember Jeff. And he helped me a great deal. Of course, one of these conventions I cooked up latterly after I'd opened my own company. But we'll get back to that another time. What I want to say is in Namibia, I was broadcasting for 6 months, and that led to many things, including a couple of programs that are recorded, including one that Jeff's still going to dig out of his archives for me, right, on the Namibian desert, one of the best programs I think I ever made, right, which I used synchronized or what I did, kind of double up, used things like cadenzas from Rachmaninoff piano concertos, you know, to describe some of the wildlife or the they call it the study of snakes, serpentology or something, right? in the desert. I had some incredible experience, some incredible material that I collected there.
You know, it's funny, I was transferring some of your old tapes for you, and I came across that report by Jeff White, and I sent the short clip to Jeff to listen to, and he wrote back, he said, you know, he remembers. He said he showed up at the station that day, and they said they got this phone call from the guy, David Monson, in Namibia, wanting to do a story on the wildfires. And you know, the funny thing is, Jeff's voice still sounds the same.
Well, Jeff,
it sounds the same.
Well, Jeff never changes, does he? I mean, he pitched up here quite like Jeff always does, you know, like apparition suddenly from nowhere. He was attending some congress, some convention here, I think, and which he seems to be doing in, different parts of the, you know, the diaspora.
But how did you follow with Namibian radio? Was it the same thing that had happened in Belgium, or was it a different circumstance?
Basically, because they like the Belgian radio, they also had monitors and spies, and, you know, as I discovered, and that's the closest I think I got to fisticuffs with anybody in a studio. But then, you know, I suppose my old colleagues at Belgian radio might tell you that, no, I never had that sort of a, you know, I only turned the director's table over once, the desk over once. I mean, that's as far as I got to. But certainly not with my colleagues, whom I was rather fond of.
Yes. You only threw a desk over. I once threw a metal reel at someone.
Good for you. No, if they're still listening, I think I cleared the desk. But if they're still listening, yeah, I was really rather fond of my colleagues. You know, we got on well together. But they had their jobs to keep, and, you know, they had the status quo had to be kept too. So I didn't expect to follow me out the back door. But that was quite kind of nasty. It was rather bloody in the end, and no one wins in a case like that. Just no one wins, you know. I should have legally, I think, won the court case, because I went. No one had ever sued the Belgian radio before. I don't think so. But the funny thing is, I understood that there were people after me that came in after me and that started on national shows. I can't remember the guy's name, but he actually worked with me on my program. And in what was then the international service, and then went kind of live on air, doing a morning show on the Belgian radio, or the Flemish radio service, I suppose, in Dutch. And he seemed to get away with it, you know. They didn't victimize or make a scapegoat out of him.
But, you know, you can actually say now that you've had the last laugh, because Belgian Radio International and Radio Vlaanderen, what it became, is gone. They are now gone, deceased.
Well, that's such a pity. I mean, if they ever want me back, if they want me to revive that show again, I mean, I'd go back tomorrow and do that. Quite honestly, I'm not sure whether I'd work for the same, you know, people. But certainly, why? I mean, this is only Belgium, but other countries have done the same thing. But why? They have so much to talk about. I mean, you know, and the whole world. You know, Dutch is my, basically could be my mother language, because half of me is kind of Anglo-Dutch, English, and a bit of, I don't know, everything else. I'd like to say that, you know, a small percentage of me was Zulu or Khoza or something as well. You know, it might have made my passage to the world a lot easier, certainly today, you know, thinking about what geopolitically the world has become. But for all that, yes. It was the way it is. That's the way it was, and that's the way it went. But such a pity, because so much could have been, so much was lost. I mean, people used to say to me, Gosh, David, what a waste. You know, you're out in the wilderness now, and I never made any kind of comeback. I would have liked to have done that in the international radio and on the short, whether it was on the short waves or not, because I then took the line that by definition, today, certainly in our digital day and age, in era, you know, every FM station is an international broadcaster, could be, but it's not quite the same thing, is it? Listening to, I have a digital radio, which I can connect to the internet, and I can listen to any one of 1,000 stations around the world. You know, so can you, FM stations, but it's just not the same.
But at the same time, there's something you mentioned that's interesting and I've talked about this with other people. I think that the problem that international shortwave broadcasting has faced, I mean, there's been challenges from many areas. Of course, technology has changed. Communism in Europe no longer resists. The Berlin Wall is down. But at the same time, something that shortwave broadcasting had that it seems to be lacking now is programming, meaning good programming, some even off-the-wall personalities, which seem to have disappeared. I mean, now when I listen to, let's say, Radio France International, Deutsche Welle, or any of the others from Europe, to me, they literally sound like carbon copies, and they're all trying to be like miniature BBCs. Anything special that they previously had is gone.
Well, what a pity. I mean, I really don't know how to answer that, Keith. I only know that. I think it's very sad that this has actually been the case, because, let's face it, I mean, 20, 30 years ago, there were some great guys out there, and we've mentioned a few of their names, and they were all trying to do the same thing, and they were all just as human as I ever was, I think, or try to be, or spontaneous, right? And maybe in some ways, you've heard my Mail and Mobile. I listened to that, and it's the first time in 25 years, I think, that I listened to that record, thanks to you, that LP that I heard the other day, and I kind of cringe in embarrassment, you know, something. Cringe and embarrassment, but nevertheless, yes, it was all an effort and all part of the content, the spontaneity of trying to make this a more spontaneous, more human medium. I mean, there was no, and I still today, I don't like television, quite honestly.
And by the way, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to a special edition of The Happy Station, broadcasting to all regions. And if you want to get in touch with us, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is pcj.happystation@gmail.com. That's pcj.happystation@gmail.com. We also have a website, which is www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. And if you want to join the Happy Station Facebook page, that's not even a word. I should say page. Please do so. Just go to Facebook, do a search for The Happy Station Show, click on join the group, and that's all you need to do. And if you join up at the Happy Station Facebook page, you can listen to all the previous editions of the show. Let's now continue our conversation with David Monson as he tells us about a DX convention that he organized in Berlin in 1989.
In 1988, we had a convention, a sort of DXL convention, a DX's convention in Antwerp. And that went very well, I think. Some of the oldies, including my good friend George Wood.
George Wood.
Hi, George. You know, he's still in Sweden, I understand, right? And, you know, it was a great success because people like George, and I don't think Ian was there, because George and Ian and Bob, and Jeff, you know, the life and soul of every occasion, Bob and Jeff, they were all there, and a few others that I could count off the top of my head now. But it was a wonderful, it was a jamboree, a DX jamboree. But, you know, many of those DSs were interested in content too. Alas, by the time I got around to doing the same thing at the International, I'm afraid, you know, not so much my aspirations or my intentions and ambitions had grown so much bigger, and I wanted to do something on a really grandiose scale. So, you know, I went ahead and hired the International Congress Center in Berlin. You know, to do something like this, you know, costs an arm and a leg, as I discovered. And happily, there were many DXs I thought at the time, you know, people had to pay to be there. Maybe DXs don't like to do that. But, you know, many did. They came. And we tried to put on a show for them. And we tried to do something again, what I think, experimental to a large extent, by having a kind of interactive online, you would call it now, but some kind of simultaneous broadcast. We had the Voice of America come in. I think Kim Andrew Elliott came online. We had Bob's panel. We had a panel of so-called shortwave experts. You know, in some of them being exported, like myself. Yes, landed up here. You know, more by accident than design. But on this panel, and we went out live. So I think a lot was achieved with that. But, you know, the DXs themselves, and there was certainly nothing underhanded about that. You know, a little profit had to be made on hotel rooms, etc., you know, to pay for everything. But once again, I mean, someone had to pay for it, and, you know, that ended up, you know, being yours truly. Maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but that's the way it was. But you had, you know, kind of, you had a few mealy-mouthed people there that, you know, turned this whole thing into a very, you know, I shouldn't be saying this, should I? But it all became a kind of, this became rather obsessive, and people thought that I was just, you know, screwing them, you know, the DXs, anyhow, that element. And when we were standing, I mean, it was historic, in a restaurant that was in a tower, I seem to remember it, or on nearby the hall, overlooking the Berlin Wall. And even then, I mean, the Berlin Wall was still standing, can you believe it? And the searchlights were still beaming, you know, and people were still screaming, you know, on the other side of it to get out, obviously, you know. And Axel Springer, which I'd first visited as a very young journalist, you know, about 10 years previously. And, you know, we were standing up there, people like myself and Bob and Ian, you know, standing up there and saying, my gosh, it's because of what we're trying to achieve here today, you know, and because of everything that shortwave broadcasting should be, international broadcasting should be, it's this that's going to be this interactive, getting people, you know, talking to one another at a personal level across, you know, thousands of miles through this medium, that, you know, we're going to bring down repressive regimes like the one on the other and a war like this, you know. And begad, you know, just 6 months later, of course, it fell down, not possibly because of anything we were saying, but it was almost prophetic. I think that was very significant for myself personally. I found that very significant. And then, you know, you had this bunch of, I'm sorry, you know, harem scarum people there that were just, you know, asking for QSO cards and things. No, not everybody did that, you know, and were complaining about the price of another bottle of wine, you know, after we'd gone through. I'm sorry, and there were a few broadcasters, professional broadcasters, doing the same thing, and I don't care if they're listening now, it doesn't matter. They were supposed to be very much part of us. And they were doing just that, you know, complaining about. I thought, what a damn waste again, you know. So here you were, really, and to a sense, in a sense, I mean, I didn't tuck my tail between my legs and run, but basically, and I can very well say it, that was the kind of, what could you say, the finally kind of brought me to my knees, quite honestly, an event like that, because I thought it could lead, or it could optimistically and idealistically, very idealistically, lead to new horizons in international broadcasting and shortwave broadcasting. And by then, I was running my own company. I had my own company, you know, communications media company in Belgium. as this all happens. But, you know, there's all this pettiness, this I remember the people from, should I mention the stations? I won't mention this, or should I? Yeah, of all places, another country that I love very much, Turkey, you know, and somehow the Turks and the Germans, you know, just had it in for what we were trying to do, you know. And very mealy-mouthed and very, very mean, ultimately, and the whole thing kind of, for that reason, I think, didn't achieve what some of us were or would like to have seen happen.
So it was that the point when you said, you know what, I've had enough of this stupidity and dealing with these ludicrous people, I'm just going to walk away from it?
It was, quite honestly, it was. That was. And I say it in, you know, in all sincerity, I was just fed up because, you know, the meanness of it all, quite honestly. And I thought, if this is the kind of medium I'm going to try and have anything to do with the help of some of my good friends, whom I know went through some of the same, I don't want to use that word, but some of the same agonies, you know, and you know, then it just wasn't worth it. It really wasn't worth it. And it's certainly not worth losing any more money or you know, tears over it. So I just got out.
So when you got it, you came to Taipei.
And I wanted to go, and quite honestly, for other reasons too. Yes, I wanted to, for a few reasons which are, I wouldn't want to recount. I decided just to up and out and go as far as I leave and go as far as I possibly could from what was then Europe, you know, and I ended up here.
And that was my conversation with David Monson.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, switzerlandinsound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, switzerlandinsound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.
Again, the website is switzerlandinsound, all one word, .com. All right, I want to take a moment actually to tell you about a special program coming up for listeners in North America on the 20th and 21st of November. A few months ago on the show, I interviewed Thomas Witherspoon, who is the founder of an organization called Ears to Our World, that sends self-powered shortwave radios to schools and teachers in Africa. Well, PCJ Media is going to present a special program called Ears to Our World, looking at the organization and focusing on radio in Africa. And the times are Friday, October 20th, from 2 to 2:55 UTC, and then again Saturday, November the 21st, from 14 to 14:55 UTC, the special broadcast of Ears to Our World. You can also catch the live web stream via the website of Radio Miami International at www.wrmi.net. Well, we still have some time to squeeze in one piece of music. Here's Silvio Francesco and Oui Oui, Oui Oui, on the Happy Station. Oui Oui, ha ha, hoo hoo.
Wee 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 wee. Komm doch mit mir auf die Reise, das wär so schön, ma chérie. Wee 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 wee. Wee 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 wee. Komm doch mit mir in die Ferne, hab ich auch nur wenig Geld. Es geht rund um die Welt. Willst du nach Hawaii oder Shanghai oder nach Rio? Auch nach Panama, das ist mir gleich. Ich sage ja.
Ja, 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 ja.
Oui, 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 oui. Komm doch mit mir auf die Reise. Das wär so schön, ma chérie. Oui, 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 oui.
Bye. Hawaii oder Shanghai oder nach Rio. Auch nach Panama, das ist mir gleich. Ich sage ja.
Wee, 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 wee. Komm doch mit mir auf die Reise, das wär so schön, ma chérie. Wee, 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 wee. Wee, 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 ma chérie.
Oui, 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 oui.
Silvio Francesco with Oui, 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 Oui. And we must get out of here right now. We've come to the end of the show. Once again, our website is www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. And if you want to get in touch with us here at the Happy Station Show, our email address is pcj.happystation@gmail.com. That's pcj.happystation@gmail.com. Once again, before I sign off, I want to remind you again to join me, well, for listeners in North America, that is, Friday, the 20th of November 2009 at 2 hours UTC for a special PCJ presentation called Ears to Our World, looking at the organization Ears to Our World and radio in Africa. That program will be repeated Saturday, November the 21st at 14 hours UTC on 9,955 kilohertz in the 31-meter band, Radio Miami International. And you can listen to the program via the web stream, of course, at www.wrmi.net. So on behalf of our production assistant, Johann Bakker, and our technician, Kevin Lee, this is Keith Parent all the way in Taipei, Taiwan, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.
You have been listening to PCJ Media, broadcasting to North America and South America on 9,955 kHz in the 31-meter band. If you want more information about PCJ, our email address is pcjmedia@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.